All right, this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe, a special interview episode, something we like to do every so often. I am Aaron. Abe is not currently here, but I do have a special guest with me, someone I met at the Big Bad Film Fest just a couple of weeks ago. We have from the director of films such as Werewolves, Line of Duty, and Marauders, and currently director of the film Under Fire, which is available on digital and VOD. Now, I have Stephen C. Miller.
Yo,
how was a great intro.
Thank you. How are we doing today?
Good, man. Good. I'm glad to be here. This is cool.
Yeah, I like I was just kind of telling you, I only do interviews so often, and usually it's with just people that I like the things that they do, or like I'm interested in learning. Like, you know, there's plenty of reasons to do interviews just to do interviews for the sake of like the press or what have you.
Sure.
On Out Now, we like to have filmmakers on just to hear about the process, because we just find it fascinating. Certainly when it comes to like, you know, smaller scale films and what they have to work with and how they can, you know, get themselves out of not necessarily a corner, but certainly just working with what they have and like showing off like the skill they have. So I want to get into things with you because, yeah, we met at Big Bad Film Fest. Did you have a good time?
Which was fun.
You have a good time at the film fest?
Oh, it's a blast, man. Like, it was my second time going. I had went the year before. They had asked me to do sort of a Q&A or host a Q&A for Bangkok Dog. So I hosted that Q&A, and it was my first experience with the film festival. So funny, they were like, hey, if you ever have something, I was like, yeah, let's figure it out. And, you know, they called me this year and were like, hey, Under Fire is coming out pretty close. We originally wanted it to be a premiere there, but Under Fire came out like a week before the festival, so it wasn't going to do a premiere. But at least they pulled off a really cool special screening, which I thought was really nice of them.
Yeah, I was able to check out the film, of course, and I really enjoyed it. And I was really enjoying because you were able to kind of give a brief intro to the film as well.
Sure.
And I was enjoying what you had to say about, you know, kind of your perspective on being a filmmaker and what you're into. You were specifically referencing things like Bad Boys and growing up on like Michael Bay and Tony Scott, like the Jerry Bruckheimer 90s.
Essentially. Yeah.
And I'm a 90s kid. So like that's, you know, that's certainly my bread and butter as well when it comes to like just, you know, pure popcorn entertainment.
Yeah, that's what I literally felt. It was like I had three younger brothers, but we were all really close in age. And so early on, we were, you know, deep into the Tony Scott, Michael Bay. You know, it was just sort of ingrained into us. Like my dad was an action movie guy. So when I was real little, it was more like Bloodsport and Kickboxer and
sure.
Anything Jean-Claude Van Damme, my dad was all about. So, you know, and then leading into the 90s, it was just like, okay, things got a little bigger, you know, and trying to find things that we really tapped into and enjoyed.
What do you just think about this real quick? Because I think of like Van Damme, certainly like late 80s, early 90s. That's like peak, right?
Yep.
Peak. Similar to like Seagal. And when I was growing up, along with like my mainstays, Terminator 2 was my growing up movie. But then you have like, you know, you have the, you know, the other Terminators, you have a Rambo, you have Stallone doing stuff. But then you have kind of that second tier, which is like Van Damme and Seagal. For me, it was Under Siege 2 Dark Territory.
Oh, yeah.
For whatever reason, that was like one of the ones that would like join the roster of these other greats. That's
the Under Siege movies were so good at the time. I don't know what it was. And maybe it was just that era when you're sitting there and you're, you know, I think I was 11 or 12 when those movies came out. So, you know, that was like peak for me too. It was, you know, Terminator 2 is also my growing up movie. It was the first rated R movie I ever saw in a theater. And so for me, that movie was, the ultimate. And so, finding other movies that felt like that, you know, fun, Under Siege was definitely one of them.
It's got to be something about like the speed, the fact that like this for the second one, because you're like a train. There's something about like the momentum that kind of keeps it going. Same with like Broken Arrow, which eventually
goes Broken Arrow. Train. You mean speed in itself?
Movie
right?
Speed, yeah,
the movie
exactly.
Speed. I mean,
even like the first Mission Impossible, you have a big train finale. There's just something I guess about the use of like trains that are like constant. Like the location is something that's constantly in motion. That probably
sure. That was definitely like early mid 90s, like. That was what they were trying to, you know, Con Air, right? It was like, let's put all these convicts on a plane. So there was so much stuff going on at that point.
Con Air is one of my mom's favorite action movies. That was
Nick Cage is the man, dude. I mean,
for sure. I mean that trilogy,
which is awesome.
That trilogy of The Rock, Con Air, and Face Off is just like almost unbeatable when it comes to like action, like back to back action films.
It's ultimate Cage doing Cage. You know, I was lucky enough to work with him and really get to just geek out with him about some of those movies and how that was at the time. And like, you know, we had at one point, I was like, maybe we should put that hair back on you, bro, for the movie. And he's like, ah, ha, ha. So he, you know, he gets it, which is cool. I mean, he totally understands, who he is, you know, in these movies. And so it's pretty cool to talk to him about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, for sure. I want to get to Under Fire, but I want to ask you a quick question. When you look at yourself as a director, you've been doing this for nearly 2 decades now. Is that right? Do you define yourself as a, how do you define it? Do you define yourself as like an action filmmaker or just a filmmaker? Like, what do you, when you like kind of summarize what you are at this
Yeah,
point?
I think for the most part, I think of myself as an action filmmaker, you know, a genre filmmaker, because I think action and horror are both genre film things like that that I feel like I do really well. I tend to mix those genres. So, you know, I sort of just look at myself as sort of like a high octane cinema guy. And that high octane can be in horror, it can be in action. I just kind of keep that as my calling card. I feel like my whole shtick is movement and pacing and kinetic filmmaking. I just like to keep everything moving. So I feel like that's sort of like my calling card.
Very cool. All right, well, let's talk about Under Fire.
This is where Delgado told you to meet him.
Right on the dot.
This is a kill zone.
Como estas, amigos?
So, we got a deal?
We have a deal.
DEA! Everyone on the ground! Nobody move!
What the f?
You were undercover the whole time!
Me?
You were!
That's something you better tell me!
You're both spooks!
I'm ready when you are.
Turn left!
We good?
Yeah. Good luck with that.
Okay, so Under Fire, this movie, it's out, it's on digital and VOD, right? People can buy and rent it on, like, how did it get to your attention?
You know, what's funny is, like, it came to me, I really liked it, but at the time I was in the process of making Werewolves, so I told them I couldn't do it. So I thought they would just go away and like they're, you know, that I wouldn't be able to make it because Werewolves was a much bigger movie. And when they came to me with Under Fire, it felt like a much smaller movie. So I was like, I don't know if that's really what I want to do right now. But after making Werewolves and the amount of, it was just a massive undertaking with practical effects and all of these kind of things and werewolves running around that I was looking for something that was just more contained and more human and had more of a human story and felt more connected to it. So I came back to it and luckily they hadn't made it yet. And Voltage has been pushing me to try to do something with them for a while. So I went back and just said, hey guys, is this something you still want to do? And Nick Chartier over there, to his credit, was like, yeah, we'd love to go do this. We don't really want to make it for anything larger than what they had. And that was small. And so, you know, I really just was like, if this is something you guys want me to do, it'd be great if no one had any input. And you just let me go make the movie. I didn't really want to have a bunch of suits on set telling me what I could or couldn't do. You know, I just had some sort of stipulations up front that if we were going to make a movie this low, then just let me make the movie and see what happens.
So that's interesting. You obviously operate in a certain space where you're making a certain scale of action movie.
Yeah.
And some of them have. So, you know, you mentioned Nick Cage, you have Stallone, you have Aaron Eckhart, you have some big stars in some of your movies. This one is obviously a little lower scale by comparison. Does that make it more fun? I mean, obviously you just said you get to kind of set your own rules to an extent.
Yeah.
That has to make it a little bit more fun, I'd imagine.
Yeah, it's more fun in a bunch of ways. It's more fun because the crew is a little smaller, so everybody's more tight. You get to, you know, play around a little bit more because everyone is there really having a lot of fun. But I think also the actors also make it a lot more fun because, you know, I dealt with a lot of older action stars, my guys that are my heroes for 10 years. And that's a sort of different mental hat you have to put on when you're directing because you really have to, I want to say the alpha dog, you have to be the alpha dog, right? And you have to really rise above some of these guys and understand, hey, they've been doing it for 30, 40 years and you're the new guy in there trying to tell them what to do. So it's a whole different mental space than when you come in with Dylan Sprouse and Mason Gooding, who are just hungry young actors who are down for anything. And I mean, like throwing them around in the dirt, tossing them over on wiring, like, you know, like they were up for anything. So it was a much different atmosphere. It was a much different mental directing space to be in, because I really found myself sort of letting go a little bit and just allowing them to be who they are, and enjoying just that moment in time. So yeah, definitely a lot of really different things.
That was literally going to be my next question. It has to be a level of trust there, right? Because you have these younger guys that, like you said, are willing to kind of not only just do their own stunts, but just kind of want to be invested in a way that, yeah, I'd imagine an older actor who, you know, is there to, you know, do their sides and maybe take the day or what have you. I can,
yeah.
So
100%. There's sometimes there's massive differences, right? And it is trust, because also with the younger guys, you know, I feel like with the older action stars I work with, there's even the trust factor is already built. You know, you've seen their work, you know, they can perform, you know, they're going to give you exactly who they are. Right. Mm-hmm. And with Mason and Dylan, yeah, I've seen their work, but a lot of that is, for me, it was more, what my kids were watching, right? I was mm-hmm. watching what they had on TV, Sweet Life of Zack and Cody, and, you know, stuff like that. And for Mason, it was Scream. I'd seen him in a few things. So, you know, the trust factor is a little bit different there, because when we first came into it, the movie was an action movie, straightforward. And I just kept reading it going, guys, there's a lot of silliness in here. And like, I feel like if we don't own that silliness and lean even harder into the banter and have more fun with it, I think the audience won't buy this journey. And they had to also have that trust in me and say, yeah, let's do it. Let's go for that. And I think those two are built for it. And so I think allowing them to really dive into that sort of comedic realm with this action that's happening around them allowed them also to have a lot of fun.
Yeah. I was certainly curious about that. Were Mason and Dylan, were they already attached when you got
no,
on?
Or did
you
so, bring them in? So funny enough, they did a movie called Aftermath,
which I recently caught up with, because I wasn't aware they already worked together
before. They worked together. Yeah. They worked through a movie called Aftermath, which I was originally supposed to direct that. But I went to go make Werewolves, so I didn't do that movie. And so Voltage was like, hey, they just did a movie together. They were really good and they're looking to work together again, mm-hmm. you know, but Dylan wants to meet you. And so I was like, okay, great. So I went and had lunch with Dylan. And that we just hit it off. Me and Dylan right. just hit it off instantaneously. And Dylan's like, you know, you should meet with Mason. So then I met with Mason. Me and Mason hit it off. So they both were like, okay, we'll do it. I think I don't know if they were really keen on just immediately jumping back in together. But I think the conversations we had, and that I was like, hey, this movie is so different. And you guys are going to be something completely different in this movie than you were in, you know, Aftermath. So they really gravitated to that. And I think that's the reason they jumped on.
Yeah, Aftermath, which is like Die Hard on a highway bridge.
On a bridge, yeah. Yeah, and I think they're enemies.
Mason play. Mason's like the Gruber, and Sprouse is the John McClane of it all. It was, and that's directed by Patrick Lussier, who's like more of a horror guy generally.
Yeah,
See him as. It was interesting to catch up with that one, because I didn't know what the dynamic was going to be. This one, obviously, it's more of a buddy cop kind of thing, where that totally. One they're literally at ends and they're partly on screen together. So I was curious, because their chemistry is so good in this movie and Under Fire. And so I was curious what that relationship was like.
Well, they're naturally that good together. Like uh-huh. that is just who they are. They're buddies. They hang out a lot together. So their on-screen presence is their off-screen presence. Like they are back and forth. It's almost like a little big brother type situation where they jab at each other. You know, they're just really good friends on set, off set. And that kind of energy like really feeds into a movie set. Like, I'm a firm believer that how the movie set runs and whatever that energy is in the movie set feeds into how the movie is. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I can always tell how my movies are going to turn out by shooting and what the energy was and what the vibe was on set. And I can feel that in the edit. And I think that's something that's really cool about making movies, is that there is this sort of happening on set that everyone's like, oh, you know, we leave it behind. But nah, you really feel that when you're in the edit and what the movie becomes.
Just to ask a few more questions about Mason and Dylan, the look of these guys, like Mason seems like you'd have to like make him work to not be in shape. That seems like he's just fit all the time. It looks like.
Yeah.
Dylan seems to be playing a little sloppier this time around compared to like what
that's,
he normally does.
That's something we talked about very early on. I was mm-hmm. like, you know, let's get you doing something you haven't done before, Dylan. Let's make you look like you haven't looked before. Mason, we knew. I was like, Mason, you're going to look like you're ripped, dude. I can't get you out of that. That's just who you are. We'll play into that stoic character. But, you know, leaning on Dylan to be more of the goofball, and more, you know, just sort of disheveled, was really where we were going. I mean, at one point he had a beard, but the studio was like, absolutely not. They were like, no way. They weren't really happy with his sunglasses at the beginning of the movie. They weren't happy with the gold teeth. But you know, I was like, look, can we use them? And then I'll throw them away at some point in the movie. And that was the compromise, really was like, okay, you got to get rid of them. So that was sort of the compromise that we did. But yeah, definitely early on, we talked about how can we make him the sloppier version of Mason. So that way we really had some kind of counterbalance.
Very good. It pays off. I do think it works well. It also, it does a good job of kind of, you sort of hide him in plain sight that way, because he's certainly capable as an action star in this realm. He's able to, you know, hold his own in a fight or whatnot, and obviously have them in a constant battle throughout this movie. So it's neat. You know, you, like with Mason, you look at him and it's like, yeah, this makes sense. He's able to hold his own. But then various people get injured at various times, and then everyone's not able to take care of themselves all the time throughout the movie. So it's neat to see them kind of interact in that way.
Yeah. And it was written for a much older duo. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, to bring them into it was a lot of fun, because they, you know, there's some of the lines they're reading. They're like, I don't know. Do I really have a kid that this young? And so we just played with it. You know what I mean? We just had a lot of fun with it and kind of just like threw out certain things. You know, Dylan throughout the movie is kind of keeps saying, I'm your rock. I know I'm the guy you lean on. And we just leaned into that because it's so ridiculous. It's like, who believes that at all in this movie? So there's a lot of they had a lot of fun together.
I'm sure it was written for Dana Carvey and John Lovitz, just like that.
Yeah.
Do you ever think about that? Do you ever think about the sliding doors world of what if Dana Carvey and John Lovitz were the stars of Bad Boys?
Oh, man. Like, that is wild, huh?
It just seems like such a weird, like, combination.
Yeah, it doesn't even seem like it makes sense, especially when you're watching the movie now. You know what I mean? It doesn't even look like it makes sense.
Driving like a Porsche on a highway. Like.
It doesn't even compute. It really doesn't compute. And I think that's the beauty of what Michael Bay does for those movies, is that he really brings this youthful energy to the movie that you couldn't see it any other way, right, than those two guys. And, you know, Martin and Will are just so fantastic at what they do. And I think that's just what I was really trying to capture with Mason and Dylan, is just this really vibe, this really cool vibe of guys that are, you know, at the beginning of whatever they're doing here in the action world. And I think, you know, I think they have a real, real career at it.
Yeah. So with this film, a bit smaller scale than something like Werewolves, which I've seen, and I quite the practical effect work I thought was really cool in Werewolves, by the way. I just want to keep emphasizing that. There's just some real, like, you know, you get a number of werewolf films, and you know, they can vary, let's just say the least.
Yeah, they can vary. And, you know, like, look, that movie was so crazy and fun to make. But at the end of the day, like, you know, the studio kept trying to recut it and do different. They wanted it faster. They wanted more werewolves. They wanted less story. And so, like, that, for me, it was like, God, guys, like, without the story, some of the stuff isn't working. And so this, to me, was like an opportunity to be like, okay, I get to focus on character, I get to focus on some story, and then have action, you know, nonstop. There was a win-win for me for this movie.
Yeah, so I wanted to ask, did you get to try anything new, or did you learn anything specific from making this film?
Yeah, you know, like what I really tried to do was keep the camera moving more in a dolly. You know, most of my movies are pretty handheld and a little more chaotic. And something that me and John Hall talked about very early on was, let's try to make the movie feel more studio, in the sense of the camera is constantly on dolly, except for there's various places where it gets kind of wild and we go handheld. But like, for the most part, this movie, and when you're moving around in the desert, this is really not easy on a movie this size, is to keep it on the dolly and keep the movie feeling like it has some weight to it with those camera movements. And that was something I really pushed myself to do. And really allowing the characters to act in the scenes was something I really tried to do. And one other thing that I really pushed hard to do was really have some really beautiful singles in this movie. You know, some of my movies are more over the shoulder, or two characters talking at once in one scene, or wider. And I really wanted to do more singles, which is a weird thing, but it was just something that I really thought would be beautiful for this movie, because of how much space we had and how much I could, you know, fill the other side of the frame with the landscape, and having one character on one side and things like that. Just little filmmaking techniques that I was like, okay, let's try these kind of things in a movie like this.
Yeah. I, so I want to talk more about kind of the action landscape this movie exists in. So this movie, it's a little smaller in scale. It's beyond just like the scale of it in terms of like its release compared to like Werewolves, which had a wider release or whatnot. This one movie is, it, you know, it's coming. It's already on digital VOD or what have you. That said, the reception, from what I can see, less reviews than maybe most releases, but like it's been pretty strong.
Yeah.
Do you tend to look at the kind of the reception your films gets? Like
I'm a filmmaker that likes to look at that stuff. Like, I know some filmmakers cringe. They're like, oh my God. I mean, look, my movies are so polar usually, where it's like you either absolutely love my films or you absolutely hate them. So I've been so used to that sort of negative or positive for, like you said, 10 plus years that like I enjoy it. I kind of have fun with it. I also appreciate honest reviews. I appreciate people that understand how to actually review a movie. And so, you know, those are the kind of things that like I look at for sure. And sometimes I look at it and go, yeah, no, this guy's right. Like, you know, I'm going to take that into the next movie and try to get this guy or win this person over, this critic, you know, like, and I'd use that a lot of times. Like, how am I going to win this critic? How am I going to get him? I haven't got him in two movies. And so, you know, I use it as fuel a little bit. Like, how do I do this? Or how do I get this audience member to jump on board who constantly, you know, heckles me online? Like, how do I get him? So, you know, there's those kind of things.
With any genre film, obviously there's more of a curve that seems to come with it compared to other,
sure,
you know, when it comes to dramas or something more quote unquote straightforward. So I have to imagine it's not just about looking at whether it's, you know, a plus or a minus, because that's just too much of a black and white thing, but reading between the lines. And if you're reading the criticism, certainly for people that kind of understand the action genre, or at least think they do, you can look at things beyond like the whether or not they overall liked it, but what they're saying about the direction or about the choices made or whatnot that separated from just like whether
the story
was the best story or something like that.
Exactly. Like, is it working? You know what I mean? Was the action working for them? Was the sequences feeling like they hit the right notes for people? And, you know, this movie was strongly received well in those aspects. Like, people were like, we love the action in the movie. They love the dynamics of the characters, which is really cool, which is, I'm admittingly different for some of my movies, because my films, people tend to feel like I'm more worried about the action than I am the characters, which is not ever the case. It's just, you know, when you get into the editing room and the studio is just barreling down on you to get action, 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 a lot of the stuff that you actually shot and character things you actually shot are pulled out with, you know, against your will. So that was one of the reasons me having control of this one was so personal for me, is because, okay, look, I get to keep the story and the banter and the characters in that I want, which, you know, there's a lot of things in this movie that on some of my other films, the studios would have said, no way, you're not, there's too much talking. We can't let them have a 3-minute speech about his, you know, about this priest in Juarez and his daughter. You can't do that. So, you know, it was fun to be able to do these things and have that opportunity to show, hey, there's a different side of what my filmmaking is that you don't always get to see.
It's something I constantly kind of bring up when I'm in conversation about certain kinds of movies, specifically horror and action, where it's like, when there's a criticism in regards to a lack of certain kinds of development, I always kind of point out, it's like, it's not like the director or the writer were like, oops, I forgot to do this. Like, there's, you know, there's got to be a balance when it comes to these sort of things. And they're not, oh no, they don't, you know, look at the dailies and say, yeah, we're done. Like, there's not, clearly there's like, there's got to be a method to all this that comes from having a lot of different people, a lot of cooks in the kitchen type of thing, which, yeah, can
100%.
It can throttle a film in some ways for sure, but like, you have to look at like, well, what else is happening here that ultimately matters to the film at play? That's what I have to imagine.
Yeah, look, I'm always battling for my movies no matter what, right? Like, how can I keep certain things in or allow, because I know what the audience is going to say. I mean, I'm an audience member. I love these movies. So I know when there's an edit coming in and I turn to the studio and go, guys, they're going to complain about this exact moment, you know, that you're wanting to keep in or wanting to lose. People will say, why isn't this here? So, you know, I'm constantly battling for my films. And so it's one of those things as a filmmaker, you really have to learn early on to have tough skin, because it is not for the faint of heart. It's not easy. You're not always the good guy, or usually, you know, the bad guy. So it's just one of those things. But, you know, I just love it so much that I don't care. You know, like, people are going to say what they're going to say. I actually have fun battling the studio. There's plenty of times where they'll say, cut this, and I'll say, sure, and I'll go back to the edit room and I don't touch it at all, and I come back and show it to them and they're like, oh my God, this was great. I'm like, yeah, sure. So I know the game. I try to play it as best I can.
Yeah, for sure. I hear you. I was just watching Line of Duty to help me kind of prepare, just to kind of get myself a little more familiar with some of the movies that I hadn't seen before. And that was one where it was always on my in my queue as far as like, oh, Aaron Eckhart playing a cop in like a real timey kind of thing. And
Aaron's great.
He's certainly like he's given a performance in there that I really admired because it feels like, yeah, despite the fact that the plot is, you know, it is what it is. It's this kind of like kidnapping thriller that has to like make certain kind of shortcuts for it to work as a movie. But like he's committed. And what you're doing is showing some interesting different, you know, a different set of set pieces, whether it's, you know, one-on-one fights or shootouts or chases or what have you. And it's like, yeah, that's for whatever shortcomings that film may or may not have, it's a matter of what am I getting? What are you as a filmmaker getting across that registers as the things that people want to see in this kind of movie? And if you have a strong character performance at its core, that certainly is going to help a lot more than, you know, having whatever is kind of.
Yeah. And like with a movie like that, it was like, how much action set, different set pieces can I get in? Can I get Point Break chase sequence? Can I get a Heat downtown sequence? Can I get, you know, the elevator sequence? Like, you know, it was just like, man, can I do all of this? And really it was about the producers coming to me and saying, hey, everyone said this can't be done. And I was like, okay, we'll just give it to me. And so that's sort of like also my passion is like finding things that people say can't be done for these budgets. And I just figure out how to do them.
How do you feel about the action landscape around you today, as far as what you're seeing and as far as mainstream releases and even smaller scale releases?
I feel like, you know, mainstream action to me is starting to feel like the same. You know, I felt like for a minute there, John Wick and all that stuff is so cool. Now to the point where I'm just like, okay, I've seen enough gun-fu and stuff like that. Like, I would love to get it back to some hard-hitting, a little bit more, I guess, Bad Boys-esque situations where it feels like it's more real and more movie, I guess, too. Like I love realistic action. I love all of that. I think it's a lot of fun. I just feel like, to me, the audience is like, okay, we'd love to feel a little bit more like we're transported to a different place and have a little bit more fun with the movie than be so heavy with, I don't know how to describe some of the action, but how it is. I do feel like that kind of stuff to me is phasing out a little bit, and that we're going to start seeing the return of some of these more like, you know, the Fall Guy type movies where it feels a little bit more like the rough and tough guy coming back, trying to feel a little bit more action heavy.
Well, with the stunt cat, the Academy finally recognizing stunts, maybe that kind of encourages something with that when it comes to studios, as far as that, which I'm so fascinated, like how you plan to judge that. I guess they just have to send really great stunt packages.
Oh, totally. How do you, go about giving who? Yeah. It's just one of those things because there's so many different levels of stunts on different level budgets that guys can do some crazy things, but they, you know, it could be the money in the budget. They did just as good as they could have if they had $30 million. It'd be even better. We know this, but, you know, their quality of work is still the same, right? So it's a really interesting category. I'm all for it. I think it's a much needed category. And I think you're right. I think studios will start paying attention more. And I think you're going to start seeing more fun stunts like that, more practical stunts.
I mean, you mentioned budget levels, but like you look at something like visual effects, for example, you had a year where you featured Star Wars and Fury Road and Ex Machina come out of nowhere and wins. Like that's, and it's the, you know, $5 billion movie at most, right? I mean, so it's, you know, the right people pay attention sometimes as far, and that's not even saying one's better than the other. It's just a matter of the odds of a small A24 sci-fi film beating a Star Wars movie in the realm of visual effects. It's not something you'd, you know, a lot of people lost their Oscar pools because of that. So it's like, you know, you send the right kind of combination of things in to emphasize what you're doing, and, you know, things can work out.
I also think that when you look at a movie like that, like it's like Ex Machina, when you look at something like that, it's not just – it's the great mix of VFX and practical in that movie where, like, I think a lot of people are like, oh, my God, no, VFX. I'm definitely not that guy. I think VFX are an amazing tool, and can be used properly. I love practical effects, and I'll use them as much as possible. Like I've said many times, like – practical squibs on set all day long. But, you know, I don't really need real gunfire going off on set. It doesn't really need to happen for me. I can do that later. So, you know, I like it. If there's a good medium, I like to find it.
For sure. And that, just to bring it back to Under Fire for a second, that is something I really like about the movie. It's a very dusty gun movie. And when I say that, I mean, like,
Yeah.
You really kind of, you know, you feel the sort of, not necessarily like the realism, but you feel the sort of, you know, push down in the corner, you got to roll around in the dirt, get messy and kind of thing. Something like a film like a movie I love, The Way of the Gun, Christopher.
I love The Way of the Gun.
That final Barton fight is so, I love, yeah. That's one of my favorite movies. It's still like, he's made these epic Tom Cruise action films with Mission Impossible, which I am such a big fan of, and yet I'm still like, this is my favorite movie of his, Way of the Gun.
I agree with you. The Way of the Gun to me is a movie that is a slow burn, excellent piece of action cinema. Mm-hmm. And that final gunfight is so good. Yeah. I just think the dialogue between the two is so good. Mm-hmm. The entire movie, I mean, you just can't beat those guys in some of those sequences in the car. And so, like, I was looking at Way of the Gun. I was looking at westerns. I really love westerns, and I kept thinking to myself, this is sort of like a, you know, we're in the, it's almost like a Mexican western a little bit, where we're kind of having a showdown here. Mm-hmm. And so, like, you know, I really tried to focus in on those kind of things. And what do I love about those movies is there's always dirt flying around. There's always, it always feels pretty dirty and dusty. And so, you know, we had a constant fan going where I'd been blowing dust on them the whole movie. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, like Free Fire is another one that I thought of. Like,
just
an entire gunfighter. Even, did you see Doug Liman's film The Wall with Aaron?
Yeah, you know, Johnson? I watched The Wall before I went and made this movie, because the concern from Voltage was, is this too much like The Wall? And I went and watched it, and I was like, oh, you know, like, it has obviously similarity of a sniper.
But it's not the same movie.
But it's not the same movie. I mean, I think that movie is much more dramatic and intense as far as, like, you know, the character there and stuff like that. But, like, you know, yeah, I wasn't worried, but I do love that movie. I love Doug Liman.
It's a cool conceit, like that whole pin down idea, which is, again, what I think Under Fire works as well as it does too. It's a neat, like, what if you took a buddy comedy instead of them just rolling around having fun everywhere they go, they're stuck in one spot the entire movie.
And how do you make that movie interesting? Right.
Exactly.
How do you keep that movie moving? How do you keep the audience going, okay, I can't stand being behind this car anymore? So I think those are all the fun things that, you know, trying to figure out when you're making this movie was what made it cool.
When it comes to kind of finding new projects to work on, is there an easy way to get things off the ground? Is there something that you can do that just makes things go along faster?
Say yes. like, I learned early on in my career, like, when I first got out here, like, I would say no to a lot of things that I felt like maybe I was above or didn't really want to make. And I found that, man, that it made it so hard to get things going that it was easier for me to say, okay, I there's something in this that I like, and to start saying yes to things and having like 30 things on the board rather than two things on the board that could possibly go. And out of those 30, one or two would go, and then it would just start sort of snowballing like that. And that's sort of been my mantra, is like, okay, if people want me to make something, I'm going to take it, a look at it strongly, especially if it's coming from my agent or manager who know what I like. And so if they're sending me something, and from producers I've already made movies with, who that tends to happen quite a bit, is they'll bring me things and I say, okay, I love this, I love that writer. Even if I'm not totally on board with the movie or the story right away, I know I can get it to where I want it to go. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, just saying yes for me has been one of those things that's just propelled my career, because I constantly have, like I said, 20 or 30 things in motion that at some point something's going
to
go.
You've gotten to work with a lot of, you know, new big stars, people that you've admired, of course, and anybody that, like, is somewhat into this industry knows that it's hard to make just one movie, and you've made, you know, a lot at this point.
Yeah.
Is there a dream project you have in mind, or is there something you just, like, absolutely would love to, or someone you'd have to work with so that you have?
You know, like, I guess the dream would be, I was a huge Batman fan, but not making a Batman movie. I was a huge Nightwing fan.
Okay.
You know, like, Nightwing to me was something that never got really touched hardcore in any kind of actual physical media sense. I mean, so for me, that character, there's a lot of depth there. There's a lot of really cool atmosphere there. I mean, it's a, you know, his orphan kid who's really hurting, who's had to deal with his dad being Batman or his, you know, his whatever. Like, it's like, you know, having to deal with those things and then being pushed to the side for Bruce to be Batman. I just, there's so many things there that in going into then trying to go on his own, I just think there's a character there that could be really great. And I always love Teen Titans because they explored that a little bit. Mm-hmm. But like, I really love that kind of space. That would be fun to play in. I also think I would do that really well. But yeah, I think that kind of project. I mean, my dream guy, though, like who I would love to work with, I'd love to work with Jake Gyllenhaal. I think Jake is a very chameleon actor. The guy could do anything. I mean, we've seen him be in the most art house movie to the most Bay movie. And so the guy is just all over the map. And I think he's someone that would be really fun to work with and bring a lot to the table.
I was going to mention when you're talking about the kind of the action films of today and what we're seeing. And yes, obviously John Wick has influenced a lot of things, but you have Michael Bay come back.
Yeah.
The Ambulance, which is got to be one of the best slash most undersung action movies of recent years.
100%. I love that movie. Like I said, Jake is so good in that movie. Mm-hmm. And you could see him having so much fun in that movie. Mm-hmm. To me, yeah, those are the kind of movies that I love making. They're popcorn movies. The audience is there to go along for the ride. We know what it's going to be. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff I just really enjoy.
I call it and I mean this in the best way, I call that a perfect TBS movie.
Yeah.
As in, like, I can turn the channel on to, like, you know, TNT or TBS, and Ambulance, and I'm like, well, I guess I'm watching Ambulance now.
And it doesn't matter where you're at in the movie.
Yeah, it's designed so well.
Exactly. It doesn't matter. It's like Speed or any of those kind of movies. It doesn't matter what part you end up in the movie. You're mm-hmm. just like, oh, right, I get it. I'm on the ride, and I can go, right, with your flipping through channels. Sure. And I mean, that's how we grew up, is flipping through channels and uh-huh. finding those movies, right? And so I agree with you. Like, if I can make that kind of a movie where it doesn't matter where you're at, great. You know, I've done my job.
You mentioned Nightwing just now, and that's kind of, that would put you more in like the superhero space. Is there genres that you'd like to kind of mash up more with? Like, obviously you do action, and you've done like Werewolves is kind of an action horror film. Is there stuff that you'd like to kind of do in that kind of way?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'd actually love to play more in the comedic space. Like, I really love comedy movies. I think I'd have a lot of fun in that space. What if that's a straight comedy? I don't know. I don't know how well, or it would be something I'd be definitely interested in dabbling in, but I love the action comedy space. I think that's something I'd really like to lean in heavily more. I think that's actually going to come back pretty heavily. I think the rated R comedy in general is starting to make its way back with the Naked Gun and things like that, that are, you can see the audience sort of, hey, we're interested in this again. So that's cool. So I'd love to sort of play with that world a little bit.
Which has to be, because like making a straight comedy means you have to have a script that is, it's intended for humor, right? We're Under Fire, as you said, is a film that wasn't that to begin with. It's a film that was brought to, as far as like, that was your take on the material and something that you knew Mason and Dylan, they could bring to it themselves. So they're doing what I assume is a lot of improv. Like, there's probably obviously a direction of the scene, but obviously they're improvising
a lot of improv
to make it a lot more humorous, right?
Yeah, really just letting them go, right? We would get what the page has on there, and then I would say, hey, let's spin it. Give me something you guys would say in this sequence, and let's see how it goes from there. Just picked up on, because we shot the movie in order. That was on purpose, right? Okay. Like, the idea was we should shoot the movie in sequence, right? Mm-hmm. So you guys feel the intensity building and building. We're not trying to – we were able to do it. We were in one location, so why not? And it was all daytime, right? So it was for the most part, and then we moved into night, so it worked out. That we would shoot this in sequence. And so that really helped the guys. It helped them understand where they were in the scene or different takes of the movie. So they were able to sort of build on that and say, oh, right, I said that yesterday. This would be fun if I delved into that today. So it was cool to do it that way.
Very good. What's coming up? What's next for you?
You know, right now I'm looking at a couple things. It's looking like I might go try and do this Joel Kinnaman movie. Stallone's circling it right now. It's called 99. It's a really fun action take on what would happen if someone was injected with an explosive and they had to do what the other person said. Almost a Crank-esque type movie, which is, it's really fun. So
I could say, oh, one of those.
One of those. Yeah. So it's like, maybe maybe I'm in Thailand in November and that's where we would go and shoot it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I have a couple other things that are a lot more fun too, which it's just sort of like trying to decide what world I want to go play in right now. Sort of just being a little bit strategic right now of what I want to do. I'd love to looking at some TV stuff, you know. I'd love to get in the world of something like Peacemaker or something like that. I think I'd do really well in that world. So, you know, just trying to figure out something like that.
Very good. Steve, you've been very generous with your time. I appreciate this. I appreciate being able to talk to you about all this stuff because this is, I think, is really fascinating. Where can people find more of you online?
You can find me, you know, X, Instagram, everything at Stephen C. Miller or Stephen C. Miller Blue Sky. That's where I'm at. You can find me at all those places. And, you know, I'm usually really easy to hit up and I try to respond. I think it's fun to interact with people, especially when they're talking about your movie. So it's fun. So, yeah, I really appreciate it. This is cool. This is a lot of fun, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. What is that on your shirt there, by the way?
That
I
just, what's that? What?
What's on your shirt that I just noticed there?
Oh, it's Godzilla.
Of course it is. Look at this guy.
I see what you got going on behind you.
I got four more next to it.
Yeah.
And I host another podcast called Two Black Guys Talk Godzilla. So
fuck. That's awesome.
You've come to the right place. Steve, it's been a lot of fun. I hope more people are able to check out Under Fire. That's again currently available on digital and VOD. You can easily watch it. It's very fun. Go check it out. And I look forward to whatever you got coming next. But again, thank you for your time.
Thank you.